And with me in the KRVS studios are Travis Guillory and Andrew Vincent, here to talk about Travis's new musical comedy called The Undertaker and His Wife. And that was kind of easy to say, but it's not so easy to talk about this production. And I love your line here in the press release that says it's Sweeney Todd meets the Addams Family meets Edgar Allan Poe meets Romeo and Juliet. That's a mouthful. That's a literary mouthful.
It is. Yeah.
Now, Travis, this is your first completed musical, but obviously you like the genre musicals.
Right. I it was one of those things when I was little, I wanted to get into theater and acting, and then I realized, hey, I can kind of sing. And then, you know, I kind of got my start in musical theater there. But it wasn't until I really came to Lafayette and kind of got out into the theater scene here that I really, you know, got out and did it and was in shows and stuff like that. But I've been doing theater for about 12 years. I'm from New Iberia, so I did a lot with the Iberia Performing Arts League, or IPAL, as a lot of people know it. And I did a lot of shows there that kind of gave me that, you know, foundation. And like I said, I moved to Lafayette. And The Undertaker and His Wife, it wasn't planned to happen. You know, if someone had told me 2 years ago that I was writing an original show and musical and, you know, composing it, and I never would have believed them. But it just kind of happened. And I brought it to the program director, Christy Lichty, at Cité des Arts. And I said, I have this musical idea. I don't know. It's kind of weird. And she loved it. And now we're in the middle of performances for it.
And it opened last weekend.
Right.
Right in the middle of the Steampunk Festival,
right,
which was a great success. It was the second annual Steampunk Festival that was centered around Cité des Arts.
Right.
And you have elements in the musical that are steampunkish.
Right. Yeah. The story itself isn't a steampunk story. It's just, we'll get to the story later. We'll get to that crazy story later. But the design of the show is very steampunk. It's Victorian, you know, which is the later 1800s, but with a very modern, futuristic kind of feel to it. So we're obviously kind of in the past, but then, you know, the language is kind of in the vernacular, and there's a lot of mix of the elements there.
It helped me when someone explained it's as if you were in the Victorian period and you were trying to imagine the future, but you don't have electricity.
Exactly.
And so the things you create, the contraptions you make, everything has to run on something else, steam.
Right.
But there's no electricity, but you're trying to imagine what the future world would look like.
Right. And like I said, I didn't write it for the steampunk and Maker's Faire. It just kind of happened that, I have this kind of weird, wacky show that I would like to do in a steampunk design. And we kind of merged it with steampunk and Maker's Faire. And we opened last Friday, and steampunk and Maker's Faire was on Saturday. And the crowd on Saturday night was a lot of steampunk revelers who came from the street, and they bought into it really quickly.
Well, they were probably dressed. You could have put them on stage.
Yeah, right, yeah. They could have blended in with the cast.
Right. Well, tell us just a bit about how you got the idea for the play, because I think a lot of people in our audience, their experience of musicals is either extremely romantic or very happy and bright Americana musicals. They're not so familiar with darker musicals, except for the odd villain,
right,
you know, in a musical. So where does this dark strain come from in the tradition of musicals?
Well, ever since I was a young child, I was always interested in the villains of the story. When I'd be watching a Disney movie, I wasn't interested in the love interest. I wasn't interested in the pretty girl. I was interested in the villain who came on for a second, did their thing, and they, you know, went into the shadows. And that's always interested me about, you know, how villains, how they think, and were they born evil, or did something happen to them, or are they misunderstood, and all that kind of stuff. And so it was about 2 years ago, and I started to sketch some drawings of these villains that were in my head. And Phineas and Irene Cunningham, an undertaker and his wife, who kill.
Came unbidden to your head.
Right. I don't know where they came from. Their deal was that they killed people and stuffed their corpses under the floorboards to make room for more business in the graveyard. And, you know, I don't know where I come up with these things. And that turned into, well, maybe I could write a short story about these two characters. And then I said, well, let me give them a theme song. And so I wrote this, you know, song about how they kill people and, you know, do their thing and why they do it. And then I thought, well, what if this could be a full-length musical? And I started writing a prologue where the chorus comes out and they kind of describe the town to you. And it's a bleak and dark town and weird things are happening here. And then a year and a half later, I had a finale. And whatever happened in between that. And like I never expected this to happen.
So these characters and this setting really took mm-hmm. a hold of your imagination.
Right.
And you created this story.
Right.
But as you were saying, villains are not simplistic. There's a complexity
right.
to them. And in addition to your characters, that couple, mm-hmm. the Undertaker
right.
and his wife, you have several other characters. There's 15 people in the play.
There are 15 people and only six of them are major
okay.
characters.
All right.
And all of them are kind of caricatures of different types of villains.
Okay.
We obviously have the Undertaker and his wife. We have an evil bishop who is out to expose the Undertaker and his wife, who Andrew Vincent plays. And then Phineas and Irene have a teenage daughter who they're trying to raise. They have this crazy, you know, life, but then they're also conflicted because they're trying to raise this normal daughter and give her a normal life, but that's not really working out for them. And they have a nosy neighbor who's kind of poking in and out at the most inconvenient times. And they have this pauper boy who Phineas and Irene's daughter is kind of, you know, wants to see. But that's another threat to them because that's one more person that could come in. And so there's a web of how these six characters all kind of move around each other. And then like you said, we have 15 performers, and all the rest are our chorus members mm-hmm. who slowly begin to disappear throughout mm-hmm. the duration mm-hmm. of the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, the evil bishop is sitting right next to you,
yeah.
Andrew Vincent, who has been in our studios many times talking about productions with the Tea Sippers. Very involved with that. Often you're here as a director, Andrew.
Yes.
And this seems like an unusual character for you to play. I don't recall
it is.
You.
Well, it you know, Travis. He wrote the character for someone much older. You know, I'm only 18 years old, and
the beard's right there makes you look a whole lot
yeah, yeah,
eviler
my beard,
and
my
older.
My beard helps me a little bit. So does the makeup. But he did several read throughs of this show before he actually did.
Yeah,
started
like
producing
way back in January, we had a couple workshops,
and I was fortunate to be a part of the third one, and I read for Tom the pauper boy.
The pauper boy.
I mean,
we just call him the pauper boy.
And anyway, he was casting it, and I had an idea, and I said, "Well, why don't we try this? Why don't we make him a little bit younger?" And it worked, but it was a different feel to it because there was a young bishop fighting with this older Undertaker, the bishop's now he's younger, he's not naive, but he thinks he knows a lot more than what he does, and so they're battling at it, and the age has a lot to do with the conflict, the religion, and obviously what the Undertaker and his wife are actually doing. So yeah, for me it's been a bit of a challenge. I don't generally play villains, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
I've played people before who are not so nice, but
well, I guess when we call him a villain and evil,
right.
really
mm-hmm.
he's very much more complex than
right.
that because
right. yeah.
he thinks he's good.
Right, absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it is. It's you really have to look at it. There are eight different ways, you know, to look at him because, you know, the audience may see him one way, but in his mind, like he has a song, and his song he discusses how he has to save the town. He wants to make sure everybody's safe. But really there's like a side to him that just wants to destroy Phineas because he's also rude to the people in the town. You know, he has this personality about him where, you know, someone asks him a question and he gives them one word answers so he can just continue with his day.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost like put God second and like stepped up onto God's pedestal. He loves the idea of the power so much that he wants that for himself. So in a way he's a villain, in a way he's a hero, you know, and then
in his own mind.
In his own mind, yeah. I guess there are several ways that it can be viewed, but No, all in all, it's been really, really interesting because I would have never seen myself playing this role in particular, mm-hmm. you know. But it's been fun. It's been a challenge, but I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed the process.
And what's been most challenging about this character for you in particular?
Well, what I was worried about in the beginning was being convincing enough to be someone who could be threatening enough, you know, mm-hmm. Could be threatening enough. He has to have a sense of. You know, he has to have some sort of threat over these people. I mean, mm-hmm. any kid could walk into the funeral parlor and say, look, I'm going to put you out of business for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And they could laugh at him. You know, so I grew out a beard and I, you know, and I use my tone. Mm-hmm. And so the most challenging part was trying to find that comfortable middle of not being completely ridiculous and over the top with the power, but trying to find a respected character. You know, he has to be respected by these people mm-hmm, to a certain mm-hmm. extent. And they have to look up to him, whether they're afraid of him or whether he is someone that they really care about or, you know. So and part of what was difficult was having to interpret it in a different way, you know, because there were some things, you know, an older bishop would have been in town a lot longer mm-hmm. versus a newer bishop who maybe he just came in or maybe he just took over or something like that.
Right.
So there were definitely different adaptions that we had to do, but
and it was like that for all the characters, because I mean all these characters are new. You know, we've been saying, you know, when you do a regular show that people have done before, you can go on YouTube and look up what they've done and yeah. see what worked and what
they're
didn't.
Stock characters,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and with these crazy little characters that I created, we didn't have that luxury, but it was a luxury in itself to where. There's no wrong, you know. Mm-hmm, what we do is what.
No one will be in the audience saying, "Oh, that's not how you.
That's not how the bishop. That's not how Caroline acts." And like Andrew was saying, you know, all these characters have so many more layers to them, and that's one thing that I've been saying that this show is about, how we all see things differently, we all perceive things differently, and that's kind of the fuel that gives all these characters. These layers that mm-hmm. that we peel off throughout the show, and we did some table work where we all kind of sat around and said, okay, we need to figure out when these layers come off and when do these caricatures of these people become real humans, and when's the point in the show that we say this character is no longer a caricature, but they're a real person that I can relate to. Because at first, some of the characters may be very difficult to relate to because they're all, you know, way up here and they – but then throughout the show, you start to relate to them and feel sympathy towards some and maybe not to others. And it's just all about how we all have our own different opinions on things and everything's subjective and the perceptions of life and – you know, that kind of stuff.
You know what I think strikes people too as I'm listening to you talk about that, in addition to just the complexity of this particular piece, mm-hmm. The complexity of those of you who are so young working in theater here in this community, that you've been working in it for so long, that there have been so many opportunities for right. you throughout your childhood, through high school. Andrew's just graduated from high school. But the way you're talking, you all are talking as though you've been in the theater for years, and you actually have. But I think people will find that very interesting. And that also – that says amazing things about how theater will develop in right. Lafayette, that you all are – not only are you acting in plays and musicals, you're writing them, you're creating them, you're creating these different and unusual characters. So I'm amazed. I just had to say that because – and it would strike me every time, Andrew, you and the T-Sippers would come. I had to keep reminding myself – I'm talking to juniors and sophomores in high school because you were so articulate and so sophisticated in your approach to theater. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So now we can continue just talking about the play. are you one of the actors, Travis?
I'm going to say I'm not.
You're not. Okay. You did write the musical and you're directing.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Well, okay, you're not. Can you tell us some of the other characters? You mentioned there are people in the chorus, and then Andrew Vincent is playing the evil bishop, the bishop. Right. Who are some of your other characters?
Well, let me just kind of give you like a brief description of the plot without obviously giving too much away. Okay. Well, it's set in this dark Victorian town, and most of the action of the play takes place in the funeral parlor of Phineas and Irene Cunningham, the undertaker and his wife, or a lot of the action takes place on the street right in front of their parlor. So, you know, they're doing their thing. We find out that they have a daughter, Caroline. She's the typical sarcastic, witty teenage daughter who just rolls her eyes the whole time. And then she kind of starts to like this pauper boy out on the street. And of course, mommy and daddy are not okay with that. So they have that dilemma that's going on. Probably I'd say the central conflict, the thing that drives the whole story, is their conflict with Bishop Barkus, mm-hmm. Andrew's character, who's trying to expose. He knows something weird's going on, and he's seeing less and less money in the collection bins at church because the congregation's getting smaller, and so he's wondering where his money's going, where are his parishioners going. So there's that. And then, of course, like I said, Mrs. Penelope Bloomingdale, who is the complete opposite of everyone in the town. Everyone's, you know, in blacks and grays and dark. And she has this fuchsia, hot pink – oh, it's just, she's a mess. And she pops in at the parlor at the worst times possible, and all of these characters just kind of intertwine with each other, and it's really sometimes very hysterical to see how they do things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So who are the actors playing these characters?
The Underdog and his wife are Rick Rowan and Jessica Jouclard, two people who are not strangers to the Lafayette theater community. Andrew Vincent, obviously. Caroline Cunningham, the daughter of the Undertaker and his wife, is Shelby Pelafig, who is a student here at UL. Tom, the pauper boy, is Carl Ashkar, who is also a student here at UL. And Mrs. Bloomingdale is Jessica Berry, who is also no stranger to the stage here in Lafayette. And then the chorus is just a lot of people who I've worked with previously who are kind of coming in and doing a really cool – we have some cool numbers in the show, mm-hmm. and they do some pretty cool things in the show.
So is there a lot of choreography along with the singing, or are they more standard chorus-like?
A lot of it's musical staging, mm-hmm. but in regards to the main characters. But mm-hmm. there are a couple of dance numbers in the show. There's a lot of contemporary movement as well. You know, for instance, the corpses go into the floor. And so we do, you know, a lot of stuff with that about, you know, in Act Two, you know, there's a scene where we start to kind of kill off maybe a couple of chorus people. And it's a very modern but very standard musical staging kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But there is some choreography. I did do the choreography as well. And it's a musical. You have all of your elements there. It's just presented in a different type of way. And I mean, this isn't a Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma where, mm-hmm. you know, we sing long ballads to each other about how we love and, you know, it's just a fun, quirky, fresh kind of musical, I think. But I'm a little biased. But
well, Andrew, as the bishop, do you have a song that you sing that you
I do.
Particularly
I have,
like?
I have a solo. Mm-hmm. And it's once he's really realized that there is something going wrong, and mine's not necessarily choreography; it's mostly musical staging.
Yeah.
But like he said, most of the main cast during some of their more important solo songs, it is musical staging. I was lucky; I didn't have to do much choreography. I'm not very good dancer. my song's very fun. It's one of the I wouldn't say it's lower key. It's very powerful, but it's one of the darker songs of the show. Believe it or not, there are some very, you know, bright numbers in the show. But yeah, no, my number is very, very fun. It's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, getting fascinated by this production. It's called The Undertaker and His Wife. It is an original musical by Travis Guillory, one of my guests here. And Andrew Vincent plays one of the characters, the bishop, in this performance. Again, a dark musical comedy.
Right.
And just to remind them that that description – did you write that description or was that Christy who wrote that?
That was me. It's the best because this show is a culmination of everything that I love.
That you love.
And so I was like, how can I put
elements,
it in one sentence?
Right. Well, you did it well. People. Sweeney Todd meets the Addams Family, meets Edgar Allan Poe, meets Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
Now, your set as well, in addition to having steampunk elements, mm-hmm. is kind of a complex set. Don't you have like a multi split level?
We have a trap door to where we can, you know, put bodies in there. And we have a coffin, a kind of lopsided coffin that opens and closes where bodies come out. I swear, the show sounds a whole lot darker than it really is.
Yeah.
It, I'm talking about coffins and a funeral, but I mean, and when that's another reason why I called it a dark musical comedy. The humor in it, because, you know, a dark comedy isn't one of those shows that you go to that you're belly laughing the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's, I think the language in it is very witty and smart to where you kind of chuckle every now and then. It's not, you know, we're not going to hear boisterous laughter from the audience every night, but it's not as heavy and dark as the description makes it sound. Mm-hmm. It's a fun show, and all of these actors that I have, I was fortunate enough to cast. They have brought so much life to these characters, and that's one thing that I found fascinating. Being there through the whole process, writing it and then directing it, and then seeing how they kind of made these characters come to life, because we literally had nothing to go off of, and the story could be, you know, perceived very dark, and if someone else directs this somewhere else, you know, they might do it very seriously and very, you know, to prove a point. But like I said, with these crazy caricatures of characters that we're creating and these wacky villains, the people that I have in these roles, the actors, just bring so much to it that make it dramatic, that make it comedic. That it's just so many layers to this show, and that's what I love about it. And that's, I consider myself very fortunate for getting the people that I got to do this show and help me with
it. That is so important. The casting,
yes.
It's all in the interpretation of it.
Yeah.
So how has the experience been for you, Andrew? It's obviously something that you haven't done much of.
It's been absolutely positive. I was excited to be able to work on it. Like I said, I was a part of one of the original read-throughs, and I really loved the material the first time that I got to actually read it. I had heard about it previously. And then I got to be a part of it, and then I got to actually be a part of the show. And one of the things that I was very fortunate, I got to work with a lot of people that I've always wanted to work with. I believe, especially in this community, that everyone should work with everyone at some point in time.
Yeah.
I think that's so important because, like you said, there's so much creativity going on, especially now. I know when I moved back 4 years ago to Lafayette, it was some great things were going on, but not nearly what's going on now. So being able to work with some of these cast members, just meeting all these new people, you know, that I've never worked with before. And, you know, I had never worked with Travis before. So being able to work with Travis, you know, just being able to continue to do work, you know, I have this thing, like I never have free time to do anything. You know, I always stay busy.
Well, I think theater goers in this town feel that way too. There's never a downtime. There's something happening every weekend.
But the experience has been really fun, and I love even though we get some audience members and some people who would, like, before the show opened, ask questions like, you know, like I hung a poster up at work and there's blood on the poster, like a splatter of blood. And my boss said, is that blood on the poster? And I said, well, it's not what it, you know, their reactions, you know, being able to explain it and being able to be a part of, you know, the original cast of this show is something really, 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 I take great pride in that. I think original work is so important, or else you wouldn't have anything.
Well, could start a whole new genre in Lafayette, Travis.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Dark musical comedy. It did open last weekend
right.
at Cité. Very successful during steampunk. It will run this coming weekend and next weekend. So
correct.
People do have a little bit of time to see it, but you shouldn't wait too long.
No.
Oh, I can go see it.
I gotta see it now.
Because it often happens, you know, word of mouth gets around, and then the last weekend is sold out, and you
right.
haven't gotten your tickets.
And we're relying a lot on word of mouth because, you know, we can advertise this as much as we want to, but no one knows about it but us. But now that people have seen it and they can go out and talk about it, that's really going to be our main marketing tool, because it's original. No one's seen this before. You know, up until last week, we didn't even know if it was good or not.
Even a poster with blood on it is not as good as someone saying, you got to go see that.
Well, it's a giant experiment, because like the characters, like us not being, you know, like we get to play them the first – no one else has played these characters before. It's like Travis said, we can say as much as we want, oh, the show's so good. But we're in the show, so we can say whatever we want. But this isn't Sweeney Todd, so people don't know what this is. Right. You know? So people –
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure a lot of the people who saw it last weekend are already telling their friends and family to go and see this. Again, if you are just tuning in, we're talking about the new musical dark comedy, The Undertaker and His Wife, written by Travis Guillory. My other guest, Andrew Vincent, plays one of the characters in this steampunkishly decorated musical, just a real mixture of interesting literary influences and musical influences as well. It will run this coming weekend and the following at Cité des Arts. Tickets are available by calling Cité or going to their website.
Tickets are available online at citedesart.org, or you can call Cité directly at 291-1122 and reserve your tickets there. Mm-hmm. Like you said, we run this weekend and next Friday and Saturday evenings at 7:30 with a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday. So you can call Cité at 291-1122 and reserve them, or go online to citedesart.org. To buy
and
them online there.
Does The Undertaker have its own Facebook page?
We do. Yeah. You can search The Undertaker and His Wife. We have an official page, and we also have an event page. And both of those, we're constantly posting updates about the show and things like that and how it's going. But if you want to put it directly in the URL box, it's Facebook.com/The Undertaker and His Wife. So look us up on Facebook. All kind of interesting stuff.
A few images from
right.
the play.
Some production photos. Yep.
I'm sure people will be eager to see those. So check that out on Facebook, and also tickets available through Cité, either calling them or from their website, through their website, this weekend, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday matinee, and the following weekend as well.
Yes.
Thank you both. Travis Guillory, the author of the musical The Undertaker and His Wife, and Andrew Vincent, acting in it as the bishop. Thank you both.
Thank you.